So welcome back to SkateSwat Pod, and we are on episode 7. Now, we just wanted to make a point before we dive into the SkateSwat, which we're going to feature today. This will actually be our second last episode for our first series. We will be wrapping up for a few weeks after next week's episode is released so that we can focus on our research and just gather what we need to gather in order to be producing these episodes. So we'll have a couple of weeks off, and we really hope that you have enjoyed this first season, and we hope that you will all stick with us for our second season. So today we are going to focus on just one SkateSwat. So this is a really interesting one, and we wanted to dive into just a little bit more detail here because there are a number of things that we wanted to get through today. So this park will actually connect to some of the first skate parks that were built in the state of Idaho. And this spot was actually pointed out to us by a member on our Facebook page, and our Facebook page is the Skateboarding Crucible, and we do get a number of requests from our followers that are really, really cool, yet this one really did catch our eye, and it left just a really big imprint on us, and we just had to go away and find out more about this spot. So please keep sending through suggestions of skate parks that you have, and we will definitely try and pick some of those up if we kind of find that they leave a bit of an imprint on us and we find them interesting. So thanks very much for that. So this skate park is called Chinese Peak, or as it was most commonly referred to as Chinks Peak, located in Pocatello, Idaho. Now, obviously, Chinks Peak is more of a racial slur, so we are not going to refer to this park as Chinks Peak. It will be Chinese Peak, just to make sure that we keep this podcast as non-offensive as possible. So this particular park gets its name from the mountain summit that stands as a backdrop to the skate park, which derived during the 1890s when a Chinese man actually died near the summit. So bit of a bizarre name and, you know, sort of riding off the back of a pretty tragic circumstance. So yeah, during 2017, the actual mountain range was officially changed from the Chinks Peak to Chinese Peak, which makes a lot of sense. So this park actually does still exist today, and it is in quite a state with a lot of cracks. There's actually one tree that is growing in some of the old runs, yet it is actually still skateable. Now, the location of this skate park makes this place just so intriguing. It is in a very rural part of the world that is surrounded by, just these high mountain ranges. The surroundings are very desolate, and I do encourage everybody just to have a look at this place on Google Maps, and I have provided a link to that in the description below. So there's nothing that sits in front, behind, or even next to the park. You know, it's just kind of still in this perfect formation, and it's just in the middle of nowhere. So it really is very, very intriguing, to say the least. So if we get into the history of the skate park, now Chinese Peak was completed during the summer of 1978, and it looks like there was an early competition held in there during the May of 1978, so before the park was fully completed or officially opened, and I think this was just more of a reason to kind of try and generate some hype around this place before the official launch a few months later in the summer. Now, it was built by the Mag brothers, who had received funding from their father to kickstart this project. Now, this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but it is still a little, it is connected to the story. But one thing that I find really interesting is that when you're reading up on a lot of history about these parks, and usually the best place to find this information is actually old newspaper articles, because in Chinese Peak's case, there was very limited information online, so we had to do some digging through some newspaper archives. But one thing that's, when they're always talking about an opening of a park, or they're talking about just any skate park in general from the 70s era, they're always kind of ranting on about the topic of safety, and this is a real main selling point. So as skateboarding was deemed to be so extremely dangerous at the time, this focus on the safety equipment, you know, not having kids riding in the streets and making sure they have sort of these designated skate parks to skate in, you know, they're so much safer, all these sorts of things. That was like just this huge key point of focus for many, many business owners. And this was exactly the case when it came to the Chinese Peak skate parks as well. So one of the first articles when they're talking about this opening of the park, you know, they're talking about the patrons at the park sticking to the rules and, you know, minimizing as many injuries as they possibly can. And there's no sort of mention of how the park fares in terms of rideability or any, you know, maybe, you know, pro skaters or anything at the time that are visiting. It's just all around the safety. And in Chinese Peak's case, they even go to just list the amount of injuries that they've had and, yeah, how they had taken place. So there's one that says, oh, there's only been a few injuries and there was a sprained ankle and, you know, a bump on the knee or something like that. So it's just pretty funny to read just how things have just changed so much over time. Now, it's a little bit hypocritical as well because, well, it's hypocritical in my opinion. Some people may not find it hypocritical, but there is no mention of generating a profit or doing this for money revenue. And that's always, if it is listed, it's a very, very sort of secondary motive for opening the park. Usually it is to do something for the community and to minimize the amount of injuries that are happening for skateboarding, these sorts of things, when really we all know that one of the prime factors to opening up a skate park in the 70s was to generate revenue. But anyway, and this can really be seen in some of the statements that are made when it came to the Chinese Peak Park. So the first article that we saw, which was dated around the opening, they're very, very focused on safety and they're very just concerned with, you know, getting kids off the streets and making sure that this is a safe place for people to skate, all those sorts of things. And then when you read of an article a little bit further down the track, they do mention that the generating a profit is their main point of focus. And based off this article, it seems like they were a little bit concerned that they were not sort of hitting their targets with generating profit. And obviously, because like many other parks during this era, it eventually shut. Obviously, they didn't generate what they needed. But again, just a sort of funny little twist that we see as a real common factor when looking at these owners or these owners of these old skate parks, how they're talking, they're trying to market themselves. Now, I will say that they did make an effort at this park. So they did run skateboard safety lessons that they would run on Saturdays between certain hours that would teach kids how to fall off appropriately, how to sort of, you know, stand as well as you can on a skateboard. But I mean, you know, practice is really going to determine how stable you are, and, you know, the better you get, the less you fall off. So there's only a certain amount of work that can be done with teaching safety on skateboarding. And unfortunately, you do need to take those falls and you do need to take those injuries to learn. So it is a part of the business. Now, if we just look into some of the details about the skate park, so it did have four sections, and the first was a pretty narrow but really deep snake run. And this thing looks like it would have been quite difficult to ride. There are five of these mounds that you would have sort of used as transitions or sections to potentially gain air or do some more sort of lip tricks. So as it widens out, there is also on one of the sides just before you enter the more deep section of the snake run, there is this vert section with this platform that it almost looks like it's kind of just been glued on top of one of the steeper first sections of the snake run. So I think the idea was that you would sort of roll into the snake run in this wider section, pick up speed. You could either go straight into the snake run, or that you could hit this sort of vert section and, you know, do what you need to do on that kind of platform and lip. So really interesting. So the second section is actually a more of a mellow ditch, or you could call it a bowl. And this must have been used to sort of target more intermediate to beginner skateboarders as well. It's nowhere near as steep as a snake run. And fortunately, there is this big tree that's kind of growing in the center of that old bowl. So it would be pretty difficult to actually skate right now if you turned up at the park. And it looks like you can also roll into the snake run from this more mellow bowl as well. The third section is just a flat section with some sort of smaller lumps and bumps, but this would have been used for more freestyle skateboarding and probably just to target more of the beginners as well. So the final section is a pretty short, steep little ditch that actually, I mean, it looks like a little bit of a half pipe. So they, again, have almost sort of glued these platforms and these little lips on top of the steeper sections here that you could probably use this thing as like a little mini half pipe or something like that. So that was the final section, which would have been sort of targeted for more of the advanced skateboarders. So what is evident from looking at some of the photos of this place, and there is some really good ones that we have pulled off a site called Skate and Annoy, and that is listed in the description below. But one thing that's evident is that, I don't know, I think this park was not particularly built very well. Just the angles and some of the transitions are quite strange, and there's a lot of kind of like kinks in the concrete. And I mean, at any rate, it would be really fun to ride. And I really like that the fact that this spot is not perfectly built and it has more of a DIY sort of approach to it. And I think it just adds to the challenge. Like, these parks are not about having everything perfect and, or, you know, super smooth or whatnot that you would see in a modern skate park. You know, these are parks that are more raw, and some of the first parks that were built and people were just still learning and putting things together. So I have sort of had some comments around this park, you know, looks like shit, look at the kinks, all these sorts of things. Well, we have put some photos up on our Facebook page, but, you know, this isn't about perfection. This is about the style at the time, and things were not perfect and things were just beginning. So I think people need to just sort of lay off and not try and compare these sorts of things to modern skate parks. It's just like comparing apples and pears. You can't do that. So we actually did figure out that there was like a wooden ramp that was actually at the entrance of the park. And there is a photo in a newspaper article that helped us sort of put this together. And yeah, it was just sort of more like a wooden vert ramp, and it had the skate park's name almost looked like written or sort of like burnt into the wood. So that was there. And it says it was more of sort of like a warm-up ramp or something like that, I think, from the comment or the little caption underneath the photo. So that was there at some point during the period the park was open as well. So during the time the Chinese Peak Skate Park was open, there was actually three existing parks in Idaho. So Chinese Peak was one of them, but the very first park to be built in Idaho was the Americana Skate Park in Boise. I'm not really sure how to pronounce it. B-O-I-S-E. I'm going to say Boise, which included a bowl snake run and freestyle section. So the snake run was restricted for the more advanced riders, while the bowl section for more intermediate and the freestyle section was for beginners. So it was sort of a common theme to have sort of multiple sections to cater for multiple skill levels. And, you know, it makes sense because you're not talking about like a few hundred people turning up to these types of skate parks in these smaller states. It could have ranged from 15 to 30 people the entire day. And when we're reading about the Chinese Peak Skate Park, they initially were saying they were getting around sort of 10 to 30 people a day. So you're talking about pretty small numbers, and you need to capitalize on as many people as possible and as, yeah, for every type of skill level. The second park was actually the Idaho Falls Skate Park. Now, I can't find any information about this place. So if anyone has any information about the Idaho Falls Skate Park in Idaho that existed during the late 1970s, then please feel free to contact us at our Facebook page, which again is the Skateboarding Crucible. Now, during the September of 1978, the Americana Skate Park in Bowes was forced to close its gates due to profit loss and increasing insurance costs. So this is a very, very common theme that happened with a lot of parks throughout America and throughout the rest of the world at the time. They were not generating a large enough profit to cover the very high sort of insurance costs that they needed to have to keep themselves, you know, not liable for injuries that happened at the park. Now, there was an attempt for the Americana Skate Park to be acquired by a new owner, yet this failed and the park was actually bulldozed and completely destroyed. It also became a liability even after closure because kids were kind of breaking down the fences to get in the park and to skate it, which I 100% understand. Being a young kid and having, you know, a limited amount of parks in where you grow up, you want to get in there regardless if it's closed or if it's got a fucking barbed wire gate around it. You want to get in there and you want to skate it. Now, the owners were actually pushing for the local council to take ownership of the skate park. And in one of the articles we read, they were thinking that it wouldn't be too difficult for the council to take this park over and they wouldn't actually be increasing their insurance costs much. And I mean, great idea, great incentive. It's great that the owners, you know, still wanted to have it there for the community because they realized that, you know, kids were still actually using it. Yet this attempt failed. The council did not want to be purchasing it and the park was bulldozed. So it is lucky that the same did not happen to Chinese Peak. The park eventually did suffer the same fate, yet minus the destruction, yet it was actually closed during 1980. So apart from an article and some nice pictures that were taken, as we mentioned before, from the skate site Skate and Annoy that are in the podcast description below, there is pretty well zero documentation of this place. There are a few random videos of this place during the winter, like more modern times, when it is covered with snow and people are sort of just taking some video on their phones. And really, it's just what we have pretty well gathered from newspaper articles, which only feature some sort of bad quality black and white shots. Now, I have been told that the family still owns the property, yet the entire park has been fenced off since it was closed in the 1980s. Now, during the years after it closed, the owners were a little more flexible around allowing visitors to skate it. Yet as the years passed and they kind of had zero tolerance for trespassers. So, I mean, it's understandable. I mean, you don't want to have people constantly banging on your door and wanting to get into a park, which is, you know, pretty obviously shut. So I can kind of see their point of view at that. There is a rumor that Thrasher did actually approach the owners to do a photo shoot at the spot, but they were actually declined. So it is an interesting story, this one. The park has just been left in its original state for decades now. Only two of those years the park has been active. So the remainder of the time it's just been laying, waiting, growing older and older. It really is like a museum, I guess, and a window into the history of skateboarding. As, I mean, it's just such a shame that it just grows, you know, older and older with no sign of being resurrected. Now, this place does actually have a for sale sign out the front of it. And if I did have an endless bank account, I would actually purchase this place with no hesitation and restore it to its former glory. I would get on a flight from Sweden, fly over to Pocatello, Idaho, and buy this place for sure if I had a limited amount of money, because it is just such a window into the birth of skateboarding. Now, during the course of our first season of Skatespot Pod, we have obviously been looking into a lot of skate parks, and the situation that we see in Chinese Peak, it is just not uncommon. So there are so many parks in the world that reside on both public and private property that are really just rotting away. Now, our whole stance on this is that there should be more attention and a push to track down these places and get them protected and restored. You know, with all the money that a lot of the pros from that generation have, I just find it really sad that there has not been a specific foundation set up that deals with skate park preservation. I mean, it's only a matter of time before so many of these places just perish, and so does their history in contributing to skateboarding. Maybe I'm completely incorrect with my statement here, the fact that there is no organization set up. I know there's organizations set up for building new skate parks in sort of like third world countries, to restoring parks in communities that, you know, sort of more poorer communities and cleaning them up and things like that. But I do not find an organization that actually researches, locates, and restores historic skate parks and works with private landowners and also, you know, governments to get these places protected and restored. I don't see that happening, because if that's the case, then hundreds, and you know, thousands and thousands of these parks that we are stumbling across every day that are just in disrepair, they wouldn't be like that. And it is just a travesty in our opinion. Now, that was it for episode 7, and we hope you enjoyed the background on Chinese Peak Skate Park. There is a level of attention that needs to be brought to this place, because there is just so much history there, and it is really so still quite intact. If you minus the tree growing out of the middle bowl, and there is some other cracks and sort of dings in the actual concrete, it still does represent what it looked like back in the day. And yeah, it's just amazing. So we really hope that you enjoyed this episode. This is our second last episode, as we mentioned in the introduction. We will be back with one more episode next week, and then we will take a break for a couple of weeks and come back with some new content. As we say on every episode, please follow or subscribe to our podcast, and we would be very grateful if you would drop us a review as well. Until next week, we really appreciate you tuning in. We hope that you have a fantastic morning, evening, wherever you are in the world. Take care. Bye.